Welcome along to Eltel and John's La Liga Weekly. So it turns out the rules have been unfairly holding back the big clubs all along. Now, finally, they've been freed from the yoke of oppression and can make five substitutions per game. You can see their true value. Atletico brought on Llorente, Morata and Carrasco, who all scored, and Thomas Partey. Real Madrid brought on Marco Asensio, who scored with his first touch of the season. Luis Suarez came off the bench for Barcelona. Struggling through, guys. Roll on the European Super League to stop all these little clubs getting in the way. Said nobody. Karim Benzema scored what might be the goal of the season. Although, if you haven't solved child poverty yet, you're not really working hard enough, Karim. There's been a lot of fuss about Celta Vigo's new signing. 4.5 months after the end of the transfer window, I fully expect Nonito to play in goal. A final victory for goalkeepers. There's been a lot of fuss about Celta Vigo's new signing. 4.5 months after the end of the transfer window, I fully expect Nolito to play in goal. A final victory over goalkeepers for the Pep Guardiola school. One step on from Claudio Bravo's spell at Manchester City. Don't bother with the gloves, we'll just go with 11 outfield players. Now, if you haven't been following, then Celta's sub-keeper, Sergio Alvarez, got injured, so they were allowed an emergency replacement. They went for Nolito, who is a winger who plays for Sevilla. Now, the great news is it's created a market for injury-prone middle-aged men. You can sign as a placeholder, and when they need a new signing, you do 3 training sessions in a week, your back goes, and then they sweep in the transfer market. There's still time, fellas. We can still make it as professional footballers. It took 7 minutes for the referee to give a penalty against Danny Garcia in one of the Basque derbies. He had to go and have a look for a feed on the internet to watch the incident back again. It's good to be back. It's good to have the VAR back again. At least they remember to turn it on, unlike the goal line technology in the Premier League. Terry's here, but Terry, I need a hydration break, even though it's 12 degrees and raining.
And I've just got to switch everything on.
No, I just checked. Yes, I did press the record button. Yes. So we don't have to make some cock and bull story. So La Liga, how's the schedule going? Have you watched everything?
Yes, I have. Yep. It's the clashes in the evening are a little bit problematic, but I just record one and choose a game, watch one, record one and watch it the next morning. So I did make the wrong choice when I watched live via Delhi against Celta Vigo at the expense of Eibar Athletic Bilbao, but Valladolid nil, Celta nil was riveting. It wasn't, I promise you. apart from Aspas missing a penalty in the second half. So, yeah, no, it's all going fine. And we're already one day ends, the next round of games starts the next day, and it's relentless. We haven't yet seen fatigue set in. I'm talking about the players, not me. it'd be interesting to see how. I think I underestimated the amount of games they're playing in such a short space of time. I knew the amounts. I knew how many weeks and days it was and how many games were left. But I think it's going to be really interesting once we get deep into it, when we get 6 or 7 games in and, you know, players are picking up injuries, players against suspended, miserable players because their form hasn't been good or their team's results haven't been what they wanted them to be. There's already a couple of teams at the top that are struggling that we thought would do better. So I think it's a slog, but so far so good for the top two. Villarreal, we've got 2 wins, and a sign that Atletico Madrid are back in the groove.
So obviously I was being flippant about the big clubs being disadvantaged by only being allowed 3 subs normally. The early sign is that if you've got a bench full of world-class players to bring on, that's quite a handy advantage to have. It seems to be tipping the advantage towards the big clubs again.
It is if you've got the numbers. I think Real Madrid are strong in that department, and I think Atletico are strong in that department. Barcelona, not so much. You know, you're looking at the bench, there's 3 or 4 names, and the first game back against Mallorca, they actually had 2 goalkeepers on the bench to fill it up. So I think that's a slight advantage there to Real Madrid if they use it, because Zidane isn't. That's the issue with Real Madrid at the moment. When I say issue, that's the difference. Simeone is using all these subs. He's rotating the squad. The players he brought on the other night was just absolutely ridiculous. But for Real Madrid, they're not using as many subs as as the other teams. There hasn't been only a couple of games in as much rotation as, say, Barcelona and Atletico. So Zidane looks as if he's going to be going with his tried and trusted small group of players. And he'd be grateful that Asensio has been added to that list now. But for Gareth Bale, no minutes. James Rodriguez, no minutes. We haven't seen Lucas Vasquez. There's a few players sitting on the bench that haven't been used and might not be used, despite the fact they can bring on five subs.
Let's drill down into that Real Madrid-Valencia game. So as we record, obviously, you know, people are going to be listening at various times and other games have been played. But it's the latest game then as we sit here Friday morning and record this. So Real Madrid won 3-0 against Valencia. They were superb second half. It looks like a straightforward win, if you put it like that. But Rodrigo hit the post, fingertip saved by Courtois that was important. And then a controversial disallowed offside. Terry, Rodrigo was the scorer of the looked to me like a good goal, and the assistant referee kept his flag down, and then complicated VAR check, and it was ruled out.
Yeah, I personally would have allowed the goal. I think it was the deciding factor for me was initially I thought Rodrigo was offside. That was the obvious one why they were appealing. Then you see on the replay that he's run from deep. He's clearly onside, not even close. But the issue was the way the ball was delivered into the penalty area. There was a deflection that took it into the path of Rodrigo. And Maxi Gomez was according to VAR images, in an offside position. But he didn't touch it. It came off of Rafael Varane. But the referee then had to decide. I think that's why we saw. Normally we don't see the referee go and check for an offside. But I think the referee's choice then was to decide whether Maxi Gomez had not fouled, but was his presence, did it impede Varane's clearance? And the referee decided it did. Personally, I didn't think it did. But Maxi Gomez was offside, so clear that up. But it came off of Rafael Varane. Maxi Gomez was slightly behind Varane. And the referee deemed, in his opinion, that Maxi Gomez, his presence there was enough to make Varane miscue the clearance. So I guess it's down to the interpretation of the referee, the letter of the law. I just felt it was one of those goals that we often see, not just in La Liga, but a lot of leagues where they were looking for something wrong with a goal. And I think the obvious one was Rodrigo. He was onside. I would have left it at that and allowed the goal. It changed the game. Not for the first time this season, we've seen a collapse from Valencia. I remember Mallorca, Getafe, and unfortunately for them, they it was almost like they felt sorry for themselves. After a good first half, scoring, disallowed, hitting the post, another fine save from Courtois, from a shot from Kondogbia, and they didn't have as many attacks as Real Madrid, but they were dangerous on the attack, and a goal was, they did have an attacking threat. But when things go against them, they just seem to go under. And there was no stopping Real Madrid, who were good in the first half, but absolutely brilliant in the second half. And eventually, as you said, it sounds like a comfortable win. Eventually it was, but it wasn't for the first hour. I think first goal came in the 61st minute. From then on, that's when they really turned on the style. And it was a lovely game of football to watch. For a neutral, it would have been a torrid last 30 minutes for any Valencia supporters, but scintillating form from Benzema, and the lovely story of Asensio coming off the bench and within 11 seconds scoring a goal with his first touch of the season after 11 months out with a very serious knee injury. So it was a tough game, but it should be Real Madrid against Valencia, but Real Madrid ran away with it in the end.
We should talk about Benzema's goal, shouldn't we, Terry? An appreciation of the difficulty, the degree of difficulty of scoring and how spectacularly he managed it.
Yeah, it was a really awkward pass to control. The control is the secret to this goal is, yes, the technique on the finish, but it's that split second, it's that tiny fraction of time where he has the first touch and has to then quickly think, I'm going to shoot. And he has to improvise to make sure he gets the right technique. It's with his weaker foot, isn't it? His left foot. And to do all that in that split second, that's what I've talked about in the past, about instincts. He had no, there was no thought process then. That's all instinct. You know, he's had to work hard to control the first ball. When he's controlling the first ball, he's probably not thinking, I'm going to flick this up and shoot. But he's had to react in that fraction, in that little moment, to improvise and to take on the finish. And it was a brilliant strike. His all-round performance, I know I've been critical of him because he doesn't get enough goals. But I think his performance last night, every attribute you need from a striker, his hold-up play, his link-up play, his movement, and then to top it off with two goals, is the Benzema that Real Madrid, you know, desperately need from now till the end of the season. His link-up play with Hazard, in particular, his partnership with him is improving. I thought they started off, as they always do, Real Madrid, even without supporters, even in the training ground, first 10, 15 minutes, they were on fire. And they really put Valencia under pressure. After that, Valencia started creeping back into the game. And there was a period where I thought, I was interested in the midfield setup for Real Madrid. It was weird. I mean, it was Casemiro as the holding player, Kroos to the left, Valverde to the right, Modric playing at the top of the diamond. So Modric was playing behind Benzema and Hazard. And I thought for the 15 minutes to half time, there was it just looked like they wasn't sure what they were doing. It was interesting to see him do that. He gets all four midfield players in. I'm not sure it entirely suits them, but it does get Hazard playing in a more central role where he can roam about and go down the left, go down the right. He can link up with Benzema. So I think it's a system that we'll see again from Zidane, you know, for the last nine games. Not for every game, but for some of them.
Valencia, what's reasonable for Valencia? What does Solares need to do to keep his job in the summer?
Well, I don't think he will. Is the easy answer. That's the problem. And I think, you know, I don't see them qualifying for the Champions League now. There was an outside chance when we started back with the two games, but I think that's gone now. Do they want the Europa League? They probably do. A club like Valencia, but it's going to be tough. They are running out of players. There always seems to be something going on in the background at Valencia. You know, in terms of players are unhappy with how the club is run and things that the club say and things that the club do and stuff like that. And I don't see Valencia making even a challenge for the Europa League now. They need to bring in players. They need to move players on. They have been unfortunate with injuries. And for Solares, I think it's going to be tough, I think, to turn it around in order for the hierarchy at Valencia to believe that he's the manager to take them forward next season. So it's going to be a tough last nine games for Valencia. I think they've got injury issues, suspension issues as well. They're on the back of, you know, not doing particularly great in terms of the opening two games. Draw with Levante, getting beat 3-0 at Real Madrid. It's going to be interesting just looking at the fixtures coming up. They're at home to Osasuna. So in terms of the league position, yes, of course, they need a win. For morale and for a boost for Solares, it's a game they have to win at home to Osasuna, who are hard, resilient, difficult to break down, despite losing 5-0 at Atletico Madrid. Yeah. But they are. People will know exactly what I mean. I mean, the game before, they were fantastic at Real Sociedad. So that's going to be far from easy for Valencia at home to Osasuna.
Well, we might as well roll straight into that game, Terry, mightn't we? As you say, Osasuna, not a team that you would have down for a 0-5. You looked at this one in, you know, normal circumstances, you'd have been thinking a draw and a 1-0 Atleti win or something. But towards the end, they played some fantastic stuff, didn't they? Llorente's pace, his physicality, playing with confidence. I thought he was probably the most eye-catching for me of a terrific performance.
Well, it was an interesting game because you're talking about it's 1-0 at half-time and João Felix and Costa were the star players in the first half. I hate to say it to plenty of teams that could be playing Atletico between now and the end of the season, but I think we can whisper it quietly. Costa looks back to good health. He's got the attitude, he's got the aggression, and physically he looks capable of putting himself about, you know, running in behind defenders. So he looks in the mood, and his performance was particularly good. He didn't score any of the five. As I say, it was 1-0 at half-time, and Felix's goal was the difference. Felix gets the second in the 51st minute, and then Osasuna, a lot of managers would have done, started making attacking changes. And he brings on, he changed both fullbacks to put on more attacking fullbacks. He put on an extra extra attacking player, and he just opened the game up. And while we're talking about Osasuna making changes, then all of a sudden, Morata comes on, Llorente comes on, Thomas Partey and Carrasco. And once the game opened up, Atletico were just so efficient. I mean, they didn't create abundance of chances, but they pretty much took every one that came their way. And Marcos Llorente is an interesting personality. It's hard to change the instincts of a player at the age of 25, but he's suddenly turning into, you know, an attacking player, a second striker. And he's actually showing us pace that I didn't know he had. I mean, there was a couple of runs where he was second favourite by a long way to run in the channel, to run in behind and overtook defenders. So he's got a little bit more pace than we gave him credit for, because we didn't really see that in midfield, because it's, you know, short distances or box-to-box runs where you're just staying with an opponent or running from one end. You're striding out rather than sprinting. But when he had to step on the gas, he had a real good turn of pace. To come on as a sub in the 64th minute to score a goal and make two is pretty good going. So it turned out a really efficient. I mean, when I say it was hard work for Atletico, they didn't concede many chances. As I say, Costa was putting himself about. Joao Felix was back in form. I can see them 100% top four. Whether they can catch Sevilla remains to see how Sevilla, you know, themselves play. The Sevilla got off to a decent start. They've got one or two issues, I believe, still. So I think, you know, Atletico just 2 points behind Sevilla now, jumped above Getafe and Real Sociedad. So I would, and in this form, with those players, I mean, Trippier didn't even come on. Arias played at right back. You've got to, you know, think they are, you know, contenders for the Champions League as well.
Okay, well, as we're rolling through, let's do Sevilla then, as that was where, you know, the league table takes us. In a sense, a 1-1 draw, kick off the round of games away to Levante. Terrific goal. I was watching it with my son, Terry, and he's getting a bit, as he's developing, he's getting the liking for direct football. And he was saying that that's a proper goal. Because it was Diego Carlos, wasn't it, who played a 50-yard pass, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, and Munir, it's a good version of long ball football. It's not humping it and hoping for the best, is it? He pinged it onto his chest, he controls it on his chest, whips a ball across for Luke de Jong to score. But it's still only a 1-1 draw against Levante.
Yeah, and the criticism, and Lopetegui took it, he admitted that the result of the game was probably his fault. Sevilla were the better team in the first half. They still have issues, I believe, when they do get balls into the penalty area in general, that there's not enough players in the box, which is surprising because Ocampos has, I think, got 11 goals this year playing from wide. But you hardly ever see him when a cross is coming in from the opposite side. You hardly ever see him as a presence in there alongside De Jong. So it'd be interesting to analyse how he's got his goals, where he's got his goals from. But I see so many times when crosses are going into the box, it's just De Jong or Nesri. There's no one else backing up the play. There's no one else attacking the far post. And that's where defenders are finding it quite straightforward to defend against Sevilla. That goal was, you know, exceptional. As you said, channel ball, Munir's pace, great touch and control, slides it across the six-yard box. He actually picks out De Jong as well, doesn't he, as opposed to those crosses I'm talking about where you're getting down wide from Navas, crossing it to the far post, only one player in the penalty area. And then Lopetegui makes the changes to protect a lead, and it cost them. Very few chances were created after that. The changes were getting more and more defensive. And eventually, I mean, we're talking the substitutions, Oliver Torres for Banega, 63 minutes, that's okay. Suso for Minia, that's okay. Straight swap, 63 minutes. Then Fernando for Jean Jourdain. Inesri came on for De Jong, and then he brought Reguilon on for Ocampos. So you can see where he's going. Fernando, they already had Gudelli, the holding midfielder, so they brought Fernando on, an extra holding midfield player. Then they bring on an extra fullback and take off Ocampos. And then Levante get the equaliser, fortunate equaliser with an own goal from, goes down to Diego Carlos after the spill from Vasilic from a near post cross. Rebounds off the Sevilla defender to give Levante the draw. So Lopetegui, it wasn't just me saying it. Lopetegui said he accepted the criticism. It was his choice, and he takes the responsibility for a lack of chances after Sevilla went one up, because they went one up literally seconds into the second half. They'd been the better team before that, and if they'd carried on playing in the same vein, yes, by all means, sit a bit deeper, protect your lead, but play, you know, use the players on the counter attack. If you're going to take Ocampos, then put, you know, another player like him on. But it's once you start putting a fullback on and trying to block everything up, there was no further attacking play from Sevilla, and Levante were able to throw, you know, nothing to lose, throw extra players forward, and it was the fullback Miramon who came on as a sub and got the cross in. He was unmarked, and you know, it was so Sevilla. It's something Lopetegui's done all season.
Shall we take a quick hydration break again, Terry, and then we'll come back. We need to have a deeper chat about Barcelona, so we'll come back and do that in a moment. Welcome back to El Talon John's La Liga Weekly. Barcelona beat Leganés by 2-0. Not exactly spectacular. Ansu Fati got a goal. Messi scored a penalty. It was a bit of a typical Messi play, wasn't it? To wriggle between players until eventually someone took him out. But Griezmann, not so good. What's the Griezmann-Messi situation, Terry? Are you concerned about Griezmann's form and a lack of chemistry between the two of them?
Yes, totally. I think I heard on the La Liga programme, Albert Ferrer was doing the game the other night on La Liga TV, and the stat appeared that Griezmann only touched the ball 22 times. Yeah. In 90 minutes, it was a lot less than Ter Stegen, for instance. So that's not by accident. And what I do see with Griezmann is a player that's working hard. He's up and down the pitch. He's closing opponents down. He's offering himself up for passes. His teammates are just not passing to him. I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous. It's something you used to think happened in football when you were a school kid. He's not passing to me and stuff like that. And it's that. It really is. I mean, you look at the amount of times the ball goes out to Ansu Fati, and you can see all the time Griezmann is making runs, he's pointing where he wants the ball, and it doesn't come. The 5 minutes later, he's doing the same thing again. The ball doesn't come. And it's kind of hard to see how this is going to change. And, you know, he did get a goal the other night, typical of the situation he finds himself in. Good finish after a cross from Semedo. Semedo was just a fraction offside. So it's tough going for Griezmann at the moment.
So why are they not passing to him?
I honestly, I have no idea. And I'm pleased because Albert Ferrer said the same. They asked him the why, and he said, I don't know. I have no idea. He's a world-class player. He came with a great reputation. He seems to be working as hard as he possibly can. And it just doesn't look right at the moment. So it's you know, whether they can find in the right position. I think he's doing all he can to, you know, to fit in. So the other night it was Messi, Griezmann and Fati. Messi predominantly on the right, Fati on the left. But if Messi goes in the middle, Griezmann goes on the right, and Griezmann make tracks back and you know, closes down up the front. He's doing all those things. But you don't pay €120 million for a workhorse up front that can run around and have, you know, show good character. You need something more. So for him to do that, I mean, if he'd have had 60, 70 touches and we're saying he had a poor game, it's his fault. But to only get 22 touches of the ball in 90 minutes suggests that it's not only his problem. You know, it's a problem in the fact that players are ignoring him, or players are not seeing the runs that he's making. Is he making the wrong type of runs for Barcelona? It's a mixture of those, I think.
Right. So we'll have to keep an eye on it, won't we, basically? Luckily, they're back in action again tonight. So we'll... it's fascinating, isn't it? Messi's form is good. You know, just a question of nursing him through the rest of the season.
It's him nursing himself through the rest of the season because he knows exactly what's needed. It was a disappointing Barcelona performance. Leganés came and played a rock-solid back five. You know, holding midfielders that didn't particularly attack in Recio, Roque Mesa and Ruben Perez. All three are renowned for working hard and sitting deep. It's not easy to break those type of teams down. They got criticism for the two chances that Miguel Angel Guerrero, I won't say wasted because I think he was unlucky. The first one, he beats Ter Stegen and then Clement Lenglet clears off the line with a fantastic goal line clearance. The second one was from an acute angle with a right-footed player. It's going to swerve away from goal. So it was hard to say, you've got to take those chances. Yeah, it's easy to say that, but he did do an awful lot wrong. And then Barcelona sorted out the defensive issues, but they found it tough to break Leganés down. Wonderful strike from Fati. Junior Firpo and him linked up so well down the left. Probably Firpo's best game, I would say, for Barcelona so far, which is a really good sign. It wasn't much more than a training session, I have to say, for Barcelona. Players got on the pitch, got minutes. Must be so frustrating for Umtiti. Not finding form, not finding a regular place in the team, and comes in and gets booked and is suspended for the game against Sevilla. Mm-hmm. He was only on the pitch for 17 minutes. A silly foul and picked up a yellow card. And I think that we have to talk about Ricky Puig.
Yes.
Who came on as well for out-of-form Artur, who's, you know, when we saw Artur first burst onto the scene at Barcelona, you know, you couldn't disagree that he looked, you know, the classic Barcelona midfield player. That form was sort of dissipated quite considerably over the last year, I'd say now. And, you know, for Ricky Puig to come in, he just lit the game up, didn't he? He's moving the ball quickly, he's running at defenders, two attempts on goal, and, you know, he's a player I would like personally to see more of. So
how much more? What would you do with Ricky Puig now, Terry? Would you have him start in games? Would you make sure he gets half an hour? Because obviously, you've got the five subs. It's an opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's the way I would go if I was Kike Setién. There's no room for error, so he can't start with players that he's not 100% convinced on in terms of whether they're up to the task of winning a league title for Barcelona. So I would imagine the likes of Rakitic, Artur and players like that will be De Jong when he's Frankie De Jong when he's fit. He's injured for the Sevilla game. But I think that what we saw from Ricky Puig the other night, 73 minutes, if Barcelona race into a 2-3 lead in one of the remaining games, you can put him on for half a game and stuff like that. But he does look to be a really, really talented footballer. The classic Barcelona midfield player, doesn't he? You know, in terms of size, diminutive, but great touch, good passing, can get himself out of trouble with skill. So it's you look around at the midfield players as well. Rakitic is 32, Vidal is 33. So there is they have to have a plan for Ricky Puig, otherwise they'll lose him. I would imagine his next step would be, if he's not going to play at Barcelona, then go out on loan next season to another club in the Liga. So I think they have to have a plan to try and get Ricky Puig involved more, so he can be counted on next year as a genuine squad player.
Right, a couple of decent games that we need to talk about. I think we'll probably brush over the nil-nils for now, but Betis-Granada, exciting finish to that one, wasn't it? A 2-2 draw.
It was, and Granada were terrific. Carlos Fernandez, still the point I made in the last podcast about strikers lacking that sharpness, it's the case in the second round of games. You know, you're looking at the there's not too many again. I think Benzema was an exception, and Carlos Fernandez at Granada, he's the one that stood out for me in terms of strikers who hit the ground running. So he gets the first goal, and Granada were playing really well. Betis were under pressure. I mean, there's no crowd there, but you had this image of I was waiting for the fake noise to play, the noise where the supporters were getting fed up with Ruby, and I thought this is going to be a first. Fake white handkerchiefs on the graphic coming up. And then Canales gets a penalty and makes it 1-1. And then talk about a turnaround. 5 minutes later, an 84th minute penalty. 5 minutes later, Teo gets a speculative goal where he's short corner and he whips it in almost like a shot come cross. One of those that evades all the defenders, goes across the goalkeeper. He hits it with pace, power. And it crept in towards the far post, and you think, oh, Betis, how'd they turn this round? And then true Betis stuff, they completely switch off at a corner. And I've no idea why Soldado was taking up the position he has, because it must have missed 15 players to get to him. He's now 5 yards past the far post. So I've no idea what he was doing there, and what a finish. As it set up nicely for him, he strikes it. First time, he beats the keeper at the near post, and it was the very least that Granada deserved. I thought they were excellent. Betis were poor. It looked like they were going to get away with it, but they didn't. So, no, it was a good spirit show. Great ending to that game.
And another 2-2, Eibar versus Athletic. Very tiki-taka, the Spanish league, Terry.
No, it wasn't. It was one of the ugliest games I've seen in La Liga. I looked at the pass count, and I don't normally go big on statistics because I can recognise who's played well and which teams played well and stuff like that. But I checked the passing, and it was ridiculously low. I mean, it was Celta were poor against Valladolid, and I checked the passing stats, and I think Celta had as many passes nearly as Eibar and Athletic in this game. I've got it. 184 passes for Eibar, 236 for Athletic, total of 420. And I looked and something, Celta in a 0-0 draw at Valladolid had something like 380. So you can tell, I mean, the graphic came up with Orellana, who's one of the playmakers for Eibar. He had five passes successful out of 14, I think it was, in the first 40 minutes. So it was end-to-end. It was kind of weird. It was classic Eibar performance. They were much better. They got the ball in the box. They got the ball wide. Pedro Leon got loads of crosses in. Kike Garcia, who gets the goal, he was good. Sergi Emmerich was good. So it was a classic Eibar performance. But I was surprised at Athletic. The only player that tried to get the ball down and play for them was Munyain. Iñaki Williams started on the bench, come on at half-time. Didn't have much of an impact, if I'm being honest. But the nature of the game meant that, you know, it needed Athletic to respond by getting the ball down under pressure and trying to play more football. They got away with it and were fortunate. I thought Eibar on the day were probably the better team and probably deserved to take all 3 points. But no, it was a 2-2 draw in the end. And Villalibre coming on. That was interesting. Eibar score a penalty, and the calling break was 69th minute, I think 70th minute, and Athletic made two substitutions during the calling break, and literally seconds into the restart, Libre almost pops up unnoticed. We didn't know he was on. It was literally his first touch, similar to Asensio. And those changes were made during the calling break. So as soon as Eibar scored, there was a calling break. And then straight after the calling break, Athletic get the equaliser. So that was quite unique. So something, you know, teams obviously switching off when they've just scored, then have 2 or 3 minute break, have a drink. And before you know it, Athletic were back on level terms again. But it actually weren't a bad watch. There was plenty of action, goal mouth action, penalty box action. But in terms of style, it was a clash.
I should mention Scottish HK Fui got in touch with us before the last podcast, and I forgot. It makes a good point. Why don't they stop the clock for the cooling break? I agree with that. I'm not a fan of stopping the clock in football. I don't want that. But for the cooling break, it's basically a quarter time break, isn't it? It's like a mini half time. So just stop the clock. I mean, I'm not a fan of them anyway. I understand if it's in Seville in the afternoon, Fair enough. Yeah. But I don't think, you know, in Pamplona on an evening, I don't think.
I know. And the weather hasn't been particularly hot so far.
Yeah.
That's been a blessing to the majority of teams.
Yeah. What about the penalties in that game, Terry? You're a bit of a handball fundamentalist, aren't you? So I guess you've got no... It was Escalante, wasn't it, who sort of trying to twist his body out of the way?
Yeah, I felt for him. It wasn't a blatant intent to handle the ball. I just feel, you know, my feelings, if it's... We've got too many grey areas, so make it black or white. If it's the arm penalty, if it's the hand penalty. So it did hit his arm. The second one, I think it was a penalty. And Danny Garcia's silly.
Yeah. You know,
we need to eradicate pulling people's jerseys at corners and free kicks. It's not allowed.
I don't know why.
Shouldn't be any leeway at all. And once you see the video, the hold up, the 7 minutes, because VAR monitor didn't work.
Yeah, the so pitch the side monitor. Yeah.
Yeah, that's get a laptop out.
Yeah, but I don't get why the VAR couldn't make a decision.
No.
Remotely.
No.
Just say, listen, mate, you pulled this shirt, you missed it, point to the spot.
Yeah.
Quick as that.
We have to eradicate that. And then players complain. You are not allowed to pull someone's shirt. Free kick. It's not part of defending. So don't do it. You know, get touch tight. You know, I get players having a little grab to feel the player, but you have to let go. You can't just keep pulling the jerseys. Someone's jumping. Mind you, we had the sending off of Bernardo. Espanyol look back to form, don't they? And they've given themselves a fighting chance at the bottom. He's sending off Damien Suarez. I thought that was harsh. I thought that was a case of two players jostling. They're both hanging on to each other. And then they let go. The ball gets cleared. Before the ball comes back in, I thought Bernardo just puts his arm out to feel the defender to hold him off. Bernardo's 6'4".
Yeah.
Damien Suarez is about 5'7". His hand, it's the palm of his hand touches the face, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And Suarez, we know, Damien Suarez, went down as if he'd taken a full-blown right.
Almost. Because it's Damien Suarez, I'd almost believe that he deliberately put his face down in order to be hit in the face.
I didn't think of that. And Getafe, they've come back poor, really poor.
Yeah.
Espanyol should have won that game, even with 10 men from 18 minutes on. It wasn't till the end Diego Lopez had to make a couple of good saves. Prior to that, Espanyol were a better team, even with 10 men. So I think that was a big point for Espanyol under the circumstances. And I think when I look at the quality they've got, and Raúl de Tomás isn't playing yet, I actually think that they've got a really good chance of staying up now. I'd back them to stay in the division now.
So one more, which is Alavés, Real Sociedad. So Real Sociedad, another team that's come back a bit ring rusty. You have some sympathy, don't you, for the teams that were going well before the lockdown?
Yeah, definitely. And I think with Real Sociedad, the disappointment for them has to be their key players. I mean, you're talking, Odegaard is miles away from what we saw prior to the lockdown. Oyarzabal has been quiet. So I think that the key players and, winning Jose is getting the nod up front to start the games at the moment, as opposed to Isak. Isak came on, didn't make much impact. So, no, it was heading towards a 0-0, I have to be honest. And then Borja Sainz with a goal, and then they wrap it up in the last kick of the game with a goal from Aguirre Gaviria. But, no, it was a hard-fought win for Alavés. Probably just deserved it. But Real Sociedad, massive disappointment for them that they've come back and haven't been able to find anywhere near the form. And all of a sudden it's turned around. We were talking about Atletico being in sixth position, and it was a concern. Suddenly Atletico, 4 points from their two games, and the lack of form from Getafe and Real Sociedad has seen them stretch away. And the 6 points from Villarreal, who's seventh now, that's closed the gap up as well. So, they've got two 1-0 wins. They were so lucky to beat Mallorca. Mallorca at the bar twice, had one cleared off the line, missed a sitter by Cucho Hernandez. It was Idrissu Barber who hit the bar twice from 30 yards on both occasions. We have a Senho, second one, he didn't even try and just knew he'd beaten, and he crashed back off the bar. So it's tough at the bottom. Mallorca, it's going to be hard for them to keep that belief if they keep being unlucky and keep playing well and not getting the points that they deserve. So they're going to have to pick up a win pretty soon, otherwise that belief, of course, massive game, the next game, at home to Leganés.
Right. There's no point in talking about the next set of games, because obviously by the time people listen to the podcast, they might have watched the next set of games and we'll, you know, making fool of ourselves. What's your schedule then, Terry? So Friday night, there are 2:30 games. Mallorca, Leganés, big game, obviously. Well, they're all big games, of course. And then Sevilla, Barcelona. So are you going to be setting up through the night watching games on playback, or what are you going to do?
Yeah, I'll take one. I'll probably record Granada Villarreal. I'll watch Mallorca Leganés, then watch Sevilla Barcelona. And if I'm up to it, I'll watch Granada Villarreal after tonight or in the morning. But the games start tomorrow at 1 o'clock with Espanyol Levante. So I probably will do the three tonight.
Your finger never goes towards the fast forward button in the middle of, because
Of course. Well, on the record one, you can go through the drinks breaks, can't you? You can go through. You know, there's other opportunities where someone might begin treatment or someone, you know, there's a stop in the game. You can fast forward that. But it's still pretty much 90 minutes. I'm fine. It's getting ready for work at 6:30 when the games start in the evening during midweek. And sitting there. And fortunately, I went on La Liga TV this week as well. Did the Skype from home.
All right, good.
And did a whole program.
Right, yeah.
So the plan, so I was on for, I thought I was going to be on for 10 minutes or so, but it was the 90 minutes. And you're treated as one of the studio guests. And then I think on Tuesday evening, I'm doing the post-match program late at night. So that'd be after the games on Tuesday. I'm not sure what date Tuesday is.
As long as you remember on the day.
Yeah, week 31 that will be.
Yeah.
So I haven't looked at that. So I'll be on the Tuesday night at 11 o'clock at night after the game's finished in the studio. At home in the studio.
Excellent.
So and do you thinking how, of various ways of sitting here looking relaxed or
yeah, so what do you do about your background?
I've got a blank wall.
Yes, right, yeah, very good, yeah.
Keep it plain. I can't be bothered to go out and queue up IKEA over the weekend to buy a bookshelf, fish tank, or anything like that. So I'm just going to keep it plain. I have a picture I could use, a background. See, like it was the La Liga studios. But when you move your head, you lose, you know, like we moaned about the players. That happens. So yes. I just went with a completely plain background.
Yeah, yeah, it's complicated, isn't it? Suddenly you can end up as a floating head, can't you, as well? Just in the middle of this head floating in the middle of your background is a bit.
It's good to keep involved and take part in it, and albeit from in different circumstances. So that adds to my schedule as well.
Yes. Yes. Cool. Right. Well, we will be back with another podcast. Exactly when, I don't know, because one or two, it's like recording issues, but we will be back reasonably soon with another podcast. So keep enjoying the La Liga football and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.